I'm your number one fan.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
My mom and dad are me.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to Killer Cuties Podcast.
That's us.
Mm-hmm. We're here to talk about Eraserhead, a 1977 film by David Lynch, in his honor.
We are, yeah.
And he just passed, so we're celebrating him by watching one of his most, if not the most, prolific movie.
Yeah, it's up there. It's a big one.
But first...
Is that my cue?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm so sorry. First, I'm gonna tell you the horror movies that are coming out in February.
Yep, and then I'll give you the news.
There we go.
Horror news.
Can't wait.
Thanks. After you.
Okay. All right, February. February 7th. We have two releases coming out. One is Hard Eyes for the I'm going to start that over. Hard Eyes. For the past several years, the Hard Eyes killer has wreaked havoc on Valentine's Day by stalking and murdering romantic couples. This Valentine's Day, no couple is safe.
Wow.
It looks bad. I'm really excited for it.
So the two times you said Hard Eyes,
yeah,
I heard hard once and I heard fart once.
Heart. My bad. I don't really enunciate very well.
That's okay. I mean, I got it in the end.
Yeah, the Fart Eyes Killer is coming. I said fart that time, just in case. Okay. Also on that day, we are getting Dark Nuns. After learning that the priest cannot arrive in time to save a young boy possessed by a powerful evil spirit, two nuns take on the dangerous forbidden exorcism ritual themselves in a direct violation of the church's sacred order, putting both their lives and their immortal souls in grave danger.
Okay.
All right.
I can go either way.
Yeah, I did see a preview for it before I saw Presence, and it looked fine. It is foreign language, so expect subtitles, but yeah, it looked interesting. I don't know.
Okay.
Could be good. On the 14th, we have Rounding. After a traumatic incident during his residency, young medical student James transfers to a rural hospital for a fresh start. The demons of James's past begin to catch up with him when he becomes consumed by the case of a young asthma patient with mysterious symptoms. I don't know. And then we also have The Gorge coming out that day. Two highly trained operatives are appointed to post in guard towers on opposite sides of a vast and highly classified gorge, protecting the world from a mysterious evil that lurks within.
Wait, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this one's getting a limited release or straight to VOD. I couldn't find much information on its release, so I don't know. But the premise sounds intriguing.
Yeah.
I think there is a trailer for it, too. I didn't watch it, but...
Okay. It kind of sounds like, just like in vibe alone, that movie where they're like at the top of the radio tower and they get stuck.
Mm-mm.
You know what I'm talking about?
The radio tower?
Yeah, they're like on top of like an antenna. They get stuck up there. They're like climbing and like one of them...
Oh,
like
Fall?
Cheating. Yeah, okay, yeah. It's like that kind of vibe, you know?
Like a stuck vibe.
Yeah.
Stuck in a weird place vibe.
Up high.
You're up high. You're stuck.
There's
a whole genre of movie. There's danger below. That's a movie premise right there. I like it. And then finally, on the 21st, we have Oz Perkins' next film, The Monkey. When twin brothers Bill and Hal find their dad's old monkey toy in the attic, a series of deaths start. The siblings decide to throw the toy away and move on with their lives, growing apart over the years. Spoiler, it seems like the monkey comes back. But I did see a trailer for that, too. It looks fun.
I mean, Oz Perkins, Stephen King. It's not a bad comic.
Theo James.
Four.
Oh, no.
Right?
Yeah. he did play four in the Divergent series.
I tell you, the last time I watched those movies, I watched them in the wrong order, and it still sort of kind of made sense.
Yeah. Remember when they never finished that series?
No, I don't, but we've also talked about that, because I thought it finished.
No, it was That's supposed crazy. To be a two-part ending. They never made the second part.
That makes a lot more sense, like, knowing the actual ending of the third movie or the fourth movie, whatever movie they finished on.
Yeah, the third movie is what they ended on.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It'll come to TV. Amazon will pick it up or something later, 10 years or so.
I'll get a reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Do you hear that?
No.
Oh. That's enough. She's scratching.
Hmm.
Okay, well, I've got some news.
I would love to hear it.
Exciting movies for February. Tough act to follow. We mentioned a few episodes back that we're getting an Anaconda reimagining with Paul Rudd and Jack Black. Well, we just got some more casting news. Then Dwayne Newton of Westworld, Steve Zahn of Joyride, Sultan Mello from I'm Still Here, and Ione Sky from Say Anything have all joined the cast with Paul and Jack. This particular reimagining, we've also learned, is about two childhood friends who, during their respective midlife crises, reunite to remake their favorite movie from their youth. So it sounds like Paul and Jack are these midlife crisis men who hire these kids to act in a retelling of Anaconda. So it's not only like a retelling of Anaconda, it's also like a remake, a movie of the remake of Anaconda.
Yeah.
Strange concept, but.
Very meta. Okay. Yeah,
it's kind of fun.
Yeah, interesting.
We also, I feel like we were just celebrating the release of season one of Teacup, that new show from Atomic Monster / James Wan. Well, unfortunately, Peacock has canceled the series. We didn't get any news why, no goodbye from the cast or crew, nothing from Atomic Monster yet. Just Variety's reported that it's over as soon as it began.
Damn.
Yeah.
I never saw it.
They put a lot into marketing behind that.
Yeah, I saw quite a bit of it.
Yeah, they had like events and stuff.
Huh.
Bummer.
Well, rip.
Yeah. I didn't watch it either. And finally, Sam Raimi. You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe sellout. Who also directed Evil Dead, Army of Darkness, and Drag Me to Hell, among others, is returning to the horror genre with a film called Send Help. It stars Dylan O'Brien and Rachel Adams. I know.
I'm sad.
It's a survival horror thriller about two colleagues who become stranded on a deserted island as the only survivors of a plane crash.
I will watch anything that man is in.
Yeah, he's fun.
He's very attractive.
Yeah, him and Tyler Posey just like have the same vibe about them, and I love it.
Oh. I don't feel like they have the same vibe.
Oh, okay.
But they were really good friends. I don't know if they still keep in touch, but...
Oh. Why? How are they friends? How did they meet?
Are you joking?
No. Teen Wolf?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You watched 2.5 seasons of that show and you
I did.
Forgot that they
I
were both,
both
the
it.
Literal main stars of it.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah.
That's why they give me the same vibe, because they're in the same show.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, they don't really have the same vibe. It's just,
yeah,
they were both on Teen Wolf.
Yeah, you're right. But see, I started watching Buffy, and now like Buffy is like all that's able to be in my brain right now. So Teen Wolf is like backseat.
Yeah,
now.
But you won't keep watching it with me? That's crazy.
Watching what?
Buffy.
I will when I have time. It's on my list. The only TV I've watched in the last like month and a half is I had to watch 2 episodes of fucking Hell's Kitchen last night to cleanse my palate of Eraserhead.
Oh, valid.
Thank you. Yeah, that's all for news.
That was 3 news. Okay.
It was.
I was expecting one more, but then you did say 3. That's
crazy. Yeah, the teacup one was a little short, but
yeah,
that's all we got. It's canceled. That's it.
That's it. That's all they told us.
Sad.
Yeah. Well, I guess now I can watch it because it's all out.
But do you want to, knowing that there isn't any more?
That's true. Unless it was meant to be one season, then it's probably going to piss me off if it ends.
It's not meant to be one.
I know. That's sad.
Yeah.
Maybe not then.
I won't. I don't plan to. Sorry.
We're like, how could it have been canceled? Nobody watched it. That's why.
Literally. No, I have not heard anything about it since it was released. We were like hyping it up.
Yeah.
It's our fault, well, personally. You and me.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, it's your fault.
Oh.
Oh.
I meant like you and me personally.
Oh, it's was, just was my mean. Joke. Okay. Okay.
Because we didn't watch it.
My joke was that nobody watched it.
True. Yeah.
And I'm not going to take blame if everybody's not taking blame, so.
Yeah. That's fair.
Thank you. All right, should we talk about Eraserhead?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'll give you a little rundown. Henry Spencer resides alone in a bleak apartment surrounded by industrial gloom when he discovers that an earlier fling with his girlfriend Mary X left her pregnant. They marry, and he has her move in with him. Things take a decidedly strange turn when the couple's baby turns out to be a bizarre lizard-like creature that won't stop wailing. That's what Google says. Lizard. I did not find it to be a lizard-like creature. It was sperm-like.
It looked like the chocolate guy from SpongeBob.
It really did.
Thank you.
Chocolate! It was written and directed by David Lynch. This was his first feature-length film. It stars Jack Nance and Charlotte Stewart. It had a budget of about $100,000, and it earned about $7.1 million at the box office. It currently has a 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb, a 85% critic score, and 82% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes.
What percent audience score on Rotten Tomatoes?
82.
Okay.
Pretty close to critics and audience. 85, 82.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I do think it is interesting because this movie does not feel like one for general audiences.
Nope.
However, I also think that a lot of people who see this movie kind of understand the vibe about it before they go into it. I don't think this is a movie that a lot of people just watch.
Correct.
So it does kind of make sense that the people who seek out this movie to watch did enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I sent you a Snapchat, but I was watching this with my cat, and Dylan came upstairs, my husband, and there is no greater god in my cat's eyes than my husband. He, like, sparkles and just, he, like, head over heels for my husband, and he starts drooling.
Aw.
So Dylan goes and sits down at his desk, and Fergus just stands on the end of the bed, screaming at Dylan to give him attention. All while I was watching Eraserhead, so it was almost like a 4D experience.
Yeah, you sent me a Snapchat.
Yeah, I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah, I liked that.
Immersive.
Very nice.
Yeah. Also, can I just say?
Yes.
Never in a million years would I have guessed that this movie was named Eraserhead because a man's head becomes erasers.
You did say, does he have an eraser for a head? And I was like, let's wait and see. Because that was more close to what happens than your prediction.
Yeah.
But
if I had money on the line and someone's like, guess the plot of Eraserhead. Or like, why is Eraserhead called Eraserhead? Never would I have said, because a man has an eraser for a head. Or his head turns into erasers. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, that his head would get decapitated. And then...
For what? Decapitated for what? How?
Well, it was just like a dream sequence. It wasn't...
Yeah, but like, nothing decapitated him. He just suddenly was decapitated.
Yeah. Crazy. But that's how things happen in dreams. This whole movie kind of feels like someone explained a dream you had.
Yeah. And someone just said this about another movie. I think it was... What's the Arrival with Amy Adams?
Okay.
You know, somebody just said this about another movie, but I feel like I was understanding it while I was watching it, and I knew what was going on while I was watching it, but now I don't think I could explain or recap what I watched.
You feel that way about Arrival as well?
No.
They felt that about Arrival.
They felt that way about Arrival. I feel this
way
about
Arrival. You've never seen Arrival?
No. I need to watch that movie. I know.
Katie, you would love that movie.
I know.
Right up your alley. Everybody says that. Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, that would be your Interstellar. I'm like, Interstellar is my Interstellar. I mean, I guess I'll watch it.
Well, I still need to watch Interstellar, so.
We could watch them both on the same day.
Oh my God, double feature?
We could watch them together on Sunday or Monday.
Oh, Sunday. Physically.
Yeah, we probably couldn't, though.
I don't know if we'd have time, no. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a valid feeling after watching this movie. I know a lot of the times, you know, kind of clickbaity will do, you know, this movie explained, you know, in our YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Just because we need the clicks. Help us click on this.
Also, we do explain them. We're not lying.
This one, I don't think we should.
I don't think we could.
I don't think we could. I don't think we should. One of my favorite interview moments is when David Lynch said that Eraserhead is his most spiritual film. And the interviewer said, really? Elaborate on that. And David Lynch said, no, I won't. And I think that's incredible.
Yeah, he has refused to talk about it many times.
Yeah, which he does with a lot of his work. I think he just wants you to take it for what it is and make your own determination of what it means to you, mm-hmm. which is fair. But yeah, there's also Peter Subchinsky did a review for RogerEbert.com. And in it, he said, to explain Eraserhead would be like cutting a drum open to see what makes the noise. You may get your answer, but you tend to ruin the drum in the process. And I think that kind of explains it.
Yeah.
I don't think this movie is one that needs to be delved into on a podcast. I think you delve into it in your own time.
Yeah. And with that, we'll see you next week.
We can still talk about the production of it, Katie.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Can you say that name again?
Robert Ebert?
Is that how you say it?
I think so.
Oh, I don't know how to say it.
Robert?
In my head, I would have said like Ebert or something.
Oh.
I don't know. But I see that name every once in a while.
Roger Ebert is, yeah, one of the most well-known critics ever.
Critics. Yeah.
I thought it was Ebert. I
heard his name out loud.
But I'm trying to think if I've ever heard his name out loud. I don't know.
We're Googling it.
Roger Ebert.
Okay, cool. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad we know that now.
So I knew. I'm glad you
yes.
know that now.
Yeah, I'm glad I know that now. Yeah, sorry. You knew. You were right.
Yeah, how dare you ever think that I would mispronounce a word? Have I ever done that besides every other episode of this podcast?
Never. I probably mispronounced four words in the first 10 seconds of me talking to this podcast. Like today. Talking about the cast of the new Anaconda movie.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about fun facts then. We're not going to explain the movie. It's up to your interpretation.
Yeah, figure it out in your own time.
Yeah. But lots of fun facts.
Lots of fun facts. Where should we start?
Well, I mean, I've got some notes about the impact of this film. It's another one. I mean, we just talked about The Shining. But this film also had an incredible impact in pop culture, cinema. In 2004, it was selected by the Library of Congress for preservation in the United States National Film Registry as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. I would venture to guess all three.
Yeah.
It's included among the 1001 movies you must see before you die. So was The Shining.
Yeah.
It was ranked number 14 in EW's top 50 cult films of all time.
Mm.
And Premiere voted it as one of the 25 most dangerous movies.
Ooh.
Which I like.
Yeah, that's fun.
A little danger. I don't know if that's what David Lynch intended, but.
Oh, yeah. He knew. He knew this was dangerous.
I mean, what's dangerous about it?
I think the risk of making a movie like this and hoping it's profitable.
I think some folks have said, you know, the stigma around potentially like disfiguration as evil.
Mm.
Also a little risky.
Yeah.
I don't know that was the intention.
No, I don't think so at all. I think this is much more grounded in.
Yeah. Well, less things. Grounded.
It's not great. Yeah, you're right. It's not grounded at all.
Definitely worth noting because people have said that and like kind of felt that way, but it doesn't strike me as that was his intention.
Yeah, I don't think that the baby was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a monster, not a deformed person.
Correct. And they even say that in the movie. I don't think that's a baby.
Yeah, exactly.
In the 10 words that are spoken during this movie.
yeah, not a lot of dialogue in this one.
Exhausting.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You like dialogue, huh?
Yeah, this well, no. No, I mean, I didn't need it. I just think that this could have been a short film. You know?
Yeah,
with
probably.
The same impact.
I mean, the script was only, what, 20, 22 pages long?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is
super short.
Short film length.
Yeah. But, like,
they don't
what
talk,
was there
so.
To say? Yeah. I just, yeah. like, some of the scenes could have moved a little faster, you know? Especially that opening scene. It was like, come on. Get on with it.
Oh. I feel like this movie's not... I don't watch this movie like I watch other movies. I watch this movie like I would an art exhibition.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
You know the films that play in a museum? That's how I kind of watch this film. That's what it feels more like.
I think that's what it is.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it is an art project. I also want to mention, just in the accolades that you were mentioning, it is also in the Criterion Collection.
So,
that's fun.
Elaborate.
Oh, the Criterion Collection basically works on kind of preserving like historically significant movies. So I think they started with Citizen Kane and stuff like that. But it's just they basically preserve movies and then also like director commentary and stuff like that that goes along with it, so that we don't lose that.
Love that.
Yeah. But that's
all
why you'll hear
David Lynch's commentary on it.
He talked a lot about the filming process, probably not
so
much about the meaning of it.
That's true.
But yeah, if you've ever seen Letterboxd, they'll do interviews with people about their Criterion Collection picks. So they're picking movies from that collection. That's why a lot of them, sometimes people are like, why don't you pick Mean Girls and like good movies and fun movies, and everybody picks like pretentious movies? It's because they're picking from the Criterion Collection. They have to choose out of those. So,
got it. Okay, interesting. Yeah. Fun. David Lynch did most of the work, feels like, on this film.
Yeah,
he was obviously the director. He wrote it, producer, production design, special effects. He did a lot of the sound editing, some of the composing.
Mm-hmm.
Lyricism. He was busy.
Yeah.
You gotta be scrappy when your budget's $100,000.
Yeah, that's not a lot. And they also, I mean, they had trouble getting the finances from AFI in the beginning. The American Film Institute helped fund this movie because the script was so short. So he received a grant, but then after 3 years of making the movie, they ran out of money. This movie took 5 years to make, by the way, which is crazy.
That's crazy.
But yeah, they ran out of money, and then I think they tried to screen it for a potential financial backer who walked out. They called it bullshit. So then production funds were donated by people in the cast, David Lynch, Jack Fisk, and his wife, Sissy Spacek, who famously played Carrie. Yeah, Jack Nance's wife at the time, Catherine E. Coulson, who also helped on the film a lot. She helped finance. So yeah, just kind of scrounged enough money to get it done.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and did you mention David Lynch was delivering newspapers while the film was beginning principal photography so that he could have money to continue photography?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Took 5 years. David Lynch had to sleep in Henry's bedroom for a year of filming because it was taking so long.
Dedication.
Yeah. I think in the commentary, too, he also points out a scene where Jack Nance walks through a doorway at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a year and a half difference between him walking to it and him walking out of it.
Crazy.
Yeah.
5 years ages a person. I'm surprised you couldn't tell.
I mean, if this had been done when he was younger, maybe it would have been much more noticeable.
Yeah.
Catherine E. Coulson also did Jack Nance's hair throughout that 5 years. She said it involved a lot of pulling and picking at his hair to make it stand up the way that it was.
Mm-hmm.
And she likes to joke that that is what caused them to divorce later on.
Aww.
She's joking. They stayed friends. So I think it's just a little hee hee ha ha.
Cute. Love that.
Yeah.
The only other people that I know that have stayed friends after divorce are my grandparents.
Oh, okay.
They're both dead now, but they were really good friends. Best friends.
Well, that's cute.
Hung out all the time. She got remarried. He never did.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Made Thanksgiving and Christmas easier, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it definitely is easier on everybody when you can amicably split.
Yeah, totally. You just don't hear about it very often.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah. My favorite fact about this movie, because it calls it back to Dune. I don't know how to say his last name. Bill Sienkiewicz, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Is the comic book artist for Dune, the 84 version of Dune, the comic book adaptation of David Lynch's film, Dune, 1984. But he cited, prior to making the comic book of Dune 1984, he said that, you know, David Lynch was a really big inspiration for him. So it kind of was all this like full circle thing. What are you laughing at? I was clarifying.
Just the amount of times you said 84 and Dune in the same sentence. That was fun.
Yeah, thanks. I was just making sure I was getting, there's a lot of Dunes out there.
There's a lot of Dunes.
We're talking about David Lynch's film, Dune 1984, inspired by the book, also called Dune. I don't remember what year that one was, but it wasn't 84.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah. So anyway, the comic book adaptation, he was influenced by David Lynch growing up, and then he got to do the comic book.
Yeah, that's fun.
It is fun. And I see some of like Eraserhead's, like the baby design. I see some of that in his version of Dune and David Lynch's version of it. Dune 1984.
The one and only.
Yeah.
Well, not the only, but the one.
The only one from 1984.
There we go, yeah. Should we talk about this baby?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
I think it's cute.
I don't mind it.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's endearing in a way.
Yeah, it's kind of goaty, too. Kind of had a goat vibe.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. One of my favorite fun facts is that in Bo Burnham's special Inside, he has a song called Sexting, where he says, I chicken out and send a picture of my face instead because my dick looks like the baby from Eraserhead. So if you've seen this movie, you know what Bo Burnham's penis looks like.
Oh, dear. I never did finish Inside.
What happened? Oh, what?
Nothing, just what came out of my mouth.
Oh, you... I just realized, yeah.
Yeah, I do like Bo Burnham, though.
Yeah, same. And then Inside came out, and it was during the pandemic, and I was like, oh, let me wait. Gotta be emotionally stable to watch this.
Yeah.
And I haven't been since, so I still haven't seen it, but one day I will.
Yeah, first half's good. Anyway, so this baby.
Yes.
Still don't know exactly what it is.
No.
Supposedly, it's an embalmed fetus of a calf, like a cow calf, specifically.
Yeah.
But David Lynch has never confirmed nor denied that theory.
Yeah. I think that this movie does kind of have a few rumors surrounding it, so I wouldn't be surprised if that turned out to just be a rumor. It also doesn't surprise me that David Lynch has let that go on
to his grave.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I don't think he ever was gonna say what it was.
No. Fun little surprise.
Yeah.
I could see it being a cow fetus. I could see it being
just a prop.
Just, yeah, a prop with like jelly on it or something.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. He would kind of be cryptic about it. He'd say it was born nearby, or maybe it was found. So I think he liked to keep up the mystery of it.
Yeah.
And then Jack Nance named it Spike.
Cute.
Yeah, apparently that stuck. A lot of the cast and crew started calling it Spike as well.
Aw. Spike.
Little Spike.
to be clear, pre-pustule spike is cute. Post-pustule spike, not as much.
Not so cute.
Less so.
Mm-hmm.
And then the enlarged head, David Lynch and Jack Nance made together, and it was in Lynch's backyard, and the neighbors could see it, and they just called it that big egg. Big egg in Lynch's backyard. It was a head. Spike's big head.
Spike's big head.
Yeah, didn't see that coming. The enlargement.
No, I don't think there's a lot in this movie that you see coming.
Yeah. No, not really.
No.
I think in hindsight, and I'm not at all trying to explain the movie, and there were some like whispers of this being kind of what it was potentially about, sort of like this fear of fatherhood.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see a lot of parallels there where it's like, you know, what if there's something wrong with the baby when it's born? And, you know, how is that going to affect my relationship? And the, like, you know, what if I do something wrong and then it hurts them? Or I saw a lot of those parallels.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I was at. And then the you know, like, engorgement or whatever you want to call that, whatever happened there at the end, was, like, the child kind of taking over your life. Because, I mean, whether your child is healthy or not, I mean, they take over your life. That's kind of the point. Anyway, so I sort of saw this movie as like that personified, that kind of like fear of parenthood and what all could go wrong.
Yeah, I think that's pretty common. It's one of the most coherent pieces of the plot that he becomes a father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, people think it was inspired by David Lynch's own fears of fatherhood. Mm-hmm. I guess his daughter was born with severely clubbed feet. Mm. And so that was just, had to get extensive corrective surgery when she was a baby, which I'm sure was really scary as a parent.
Yeah.
But a lot of people say that David Lynch's wife was pregnant with his daughter, Jennifer, when they were making this film. But that's not true. She was, I think, 3 years old when they first started, and then 8 years old by the time production ended. So.
Yeah, 8 by the end of it. Wasn't she in it, too? I feel like one of his kids was in it. Hold on. I'm going to look. Yeah, Jennifer?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she played the little girl. What little girl?
Yeah, what little girl? I don't remember a little girl.
Me neither.
Oh, she made a brief appearance in her father's debut feature film, Eraserhead, but her appearance was not included in the final cut.
Okay, I was like, I don't remember a little girl in this movie.
Did you know that she directed episodes of Teen Wolf?
Did she really?
Yeah, Teen Wolf, Psych, Walking Dead, American Horror Story, Once Upon a Time, Hawaii Five-0, Elementary, The Strain, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, wow.
Tons of directing credits.
Gossip Girl?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the reboot, not the...
Crazy. Who knew? I hope she's okay.
Me too. I'm sure that's always difficult.
Yeah, traumatizing to lose your parent at any age, I'm sure. Anyway, there was actually a lot cut from this film, sounds like. There were some poorly received test screenings, and David Lynch was like, I got the sound mixing wrong. It's too long. So he cut 20 minutes of footage, a scene where Catherine E. Coulson, is the infant's midwife.
Mm.
Another of a man torturing two women. Again, Catherine E. Coulson plays one of those women with a car battery. Terrible. Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
Glad that got cut. And then one of Henry playing with a dead cat. Didn't seem like any of those were really necessary, so...
Yeah, I think those were fine to be cut.
Yeah. But yeah, it was originally 20 minutes longer when he first started screening it. And there was probably the scenes from Jennifer Lynch.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Did you like the little song, the musical number?
Yeah, big fan of In Heaven.
Yeah. A lot of bands play it, supposedly. The Pixies being one of them. That seems up their alley.
I think it's fun. Who doesn't like a little musical number?
It fit the tone, the vibe. It wasn't out of place.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot that could be out of place in this movie.
Laurel Neer was who played the woman in the radiator, the lady in the radiator, I think is her official title.
Mm-hmm.
She is a singer who performed folk music with her sisters. But she's actually not singing the song. It's Peter Ivers who is singing the song, and Laurel is just lip syncing. Peter Ives is also who composed that song in particular at David Lynch's request. Then David Lynch wrote the lyrics.
Fun.
I mean, kind of a waste of talent, right? You've got this accomplished folk music artist, and here's Peter.
Well, maybe her voice just didn't fit the vibe, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Was this movie older than, like, it needed to be? Like, it looked older than a late 70s movie? I feel like, one, we had color TV by then, right? At the end of the 70s.
Yeah.
And two, a little bit better quality recording.
We had color TV way before the 70s.
Yeah.
Remember when we talked about Psycho? That was a financial choice. They could have done it in color. That was 60.
That was in the 60s. So maybe this was also a financial choice.
I think it was also aesthetic.
Stylistic.
Yeah, it was definitely a choice to do it in black and white. I don't necessarily think it looks older. I think maybe the reason why it feels that way is because it's so minimalist almost. Not minimalist in like content, but in set design and
sure.
That industrial feeling kind of feels limited, and also anything in black and white is going to feel older than it is.
Yeah.
But I think you can tell with the baby and the special effects there that it is a little bit more updated.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. It just felt older to me. I don't know.
It's which is not a bad thing. Black and white effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, a movie in black and white? Old.
Dr. Eggers does a good job. Black and white.
He did The Lighthouse.
Yeah. Lighthouse doesn't look like an old movie. It just looks like a stylistically black and white movie.
I feel like it doesn't look old to you because you know who Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson are. Like, you can't put them in a movie and have it look old because you know them.
I don't know. I think you could. I do know them.
I don't know. I think that kind of plays with your mind a little bit because you know what year that movie takes place immediately because you know who they are.
Yeah.
Whereas a movie like this, did you know Jack Nance before you watched this?
No.
Exactly. So it's going to feel older because it's black and white and there's no one in it, you know. Nobody in this movie has iPhone face.
No. Not a single one of them.
Not one.
Oh, iPhone face.
Yeah. Sometimes you just look like you know.
Yeah.
This movie was originally released as a midnight movie. And a lot of people in Hollywood saw it and were really impressed by it. John Waters saw it. He said that it was one of his favorite movies. He urged other people to go see it. Stanley Kubrick, as we talked about last episode, really loved it. He mm-hmm. made everybody in The Shining watch it as inspiration for the movie. Mel Brooks saw it, and he offered Lynch the chance to direct The Elephant Man, which Lynch accepted and went on to do next. George Lucas saw it and asked Lynch to direct Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi.
The third one.
Yes.
Made. The third one made.
Yeah. And Lynch turned that down.
That's crazy.
I do think it's quite a leap to watch this movie and be like, you know what he'd be perfect for? Star Wars.
Well, he had done Dune by then, right?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe, yeah.
Star Wars is just Dune.
That is true.
Like, that unquestionably, it's identical.
Identical, huh?
Well, no, but it's pretty close.
That's what I thought.
Interesting.
Yeah, Dune was 1984, so maybe Eraserhead wasn't the only thing George Lucas had seen from him when he asked him to do that, but...
Still.
Pretty cool.
Quite the leap from...
From this movie.
Eraserhead to Dune, Eraserhead to Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how Elephant Man is, but...
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
I feel like it's a little more mainstream.
Yeah. I just want to... I want to know how people's brains work like this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's in my brain to be able to create an idea like this.
It sure is something.
Yeah, I find it very interesting when people are able to do these types of metaphorical, absurdist, surreal type of projects.
Yeah.
Because my mind just doesn't work that way. And I kind of wish it did because it seems really cool. But yeah, interesting.
Well, any other fun facts?
Yeah.
Okay.
The soundtrack... I like this one, so I'm going to say it. The soundtrack album was dedicated to the Man in the Planet's sister. The Man in the Planet in the movie is played by Jack Fisk, who was the brother of Lynch's then-wife, Mary Fisk. So it's dedicated to her. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a very, like, all-in-the-family kind of movie.
Yeah, it was definitely a group of people who got together and said, we're going to make this happen no matter what.
Yeah, small group of people. Like, six people.
Yeah, not a lot. And I know a lot of them, even kind of going all the way back to the budget thing, they worked for free because they knew it just wasn't in the budget. And David Lynch just promised a percentage of all future profits. And I guess some of them are still getting checks, so get the residuals.
Yeah. I mean, $7 million over all that time inflates to quite a bit if you've been collecting that.
Do you have any other fun facts?
Not from me, no.
I'll just end it with one more.
Okay.
Jack Nance said he never knew, nor did he care, what Eraserhead meant.
Oh.
And in an interview with Twin Peaks fanzine Wrapped in Plastic, he said, "You guys get way too deep over this business. I don't take it all that seriously. It's only a movie." I think that's kind of fun.
It is just a movie.
He's like, calm down, nerds. It's just a movie.
It's just a movie. Well, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. Should we rate it?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
How scary did you think it was?
I gave it a 1. I gave it half a point. Not really because it scared me. I don't think it's scary. I think it's just unnerving.
Yeah.
Unsettling is more the vibe. So I did give it like a little point for that. What about you?
I also gave it a 1 because there's sort of a tone about it that might be scary. It's just like adjacent to scary. So I said specifically a touch unsettling.
Yeah.
Thought provoking perhaps.
Yeah.
But no, not really scary. I wasn't scared.
Yeah. How sexy did you think this movie was?
It wasn't. I gave it a 0.5. This is another one kind of like The Shining where it's like feels a little trivializing to be rating such an iconic piece of art this way. That's not going to stop us from doing it, but I just a thought I had when kind of ruminating over my rating.
Mm-hmm.
You?
Yeah, I also gave it a 0.5. It's devoid of sex.
Well, no.
Sexiness. Okay. Not devoid of sex itself, but devoid of sexiness.
Yeah.
I do think this is a great first date movie, though.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't watch it with Dylan, by the way, because he doesn't like eye stuff, and that lady getting in there, that would have gotten him. He would not have liked that. But, I mean, for anybody else on a first date, perhaps.
Yeah. Not you and your husband on a first date. 7 years into your relationship?
Eight 2 days ago.
Oh my gosh.
It was our first date.
Wait, that's so cute. I was pretty close too.
You were pretty close.
But yeah, I think I would take a first date to see this.
Totally. I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or not. I'm not. First date. Okay.
I really would because I think if they stick around, then I'm like, okay, this could work. And if they're like, if they never talk to me again, I'm like, well.
Yeah.
It wasn't written in the stars. I'm serious. I think this is a great first date movie.
Me too. I think that's the title of this episode. Eraserhead, the perfect first date movie.
Perfect first date movie. This, do a double feature of this and then Midsommar right after, just to see. Just to see their reactions.
You learn a lot about someone by their reaction to this movie and Midsommar.
Yeah. It's a litmus test.
Yes. Early on, just get it out of the way. You don't want to be dating someone for 8 years and find out they don't appreciate art.
That'd be crazy.
That would be crazy. How fucked up did you think it was?
I give it 1 point. So I give it a 1.5.
Okay.
Just kind of for the vibe of it all. You know? Yeah. The pustules on the baby, him stabbing it, the goo of it all.
Yeah.
Just overall vibe. Yeah. A little fucked up. What about you?
Well, I also gave it a point, but that put it at a 2 because I forgot we were doing the 0.5 thing. So I also gave it a 1.5 in hindsight. Right. Because I don't know that fucked up is the appropriate expression here. And again, it's sort of trivializing the impact of the film. Yeah. It was shocking. It was weird. It was unexpected, thought-provoking. Was it fucked up? I mean, I guess. But, like, yeah. Not...
It's not fucked up in the way that most horror movies are fucked
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
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 So I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Valid.
Yeah. Thanks.
Overall, what did you think of Eraserhead?
Yeah. I really didn't know what to say about this movie. I mean, I was trying to, like, just type up, you know, my thoughts, and I just didn't really have any... I mean, I can't stop thinking about it, but I'm not formulating any thoughts.
Great.
I wanted so badly to be a part of this kind of cult that believes that David Lynch can do no wrong, because I do think he did a good job with Dune, which is one of, if not my favorite franchises of all time. It would be an absolute disrespect to his name and memory to not credit Eraserhead as being viscerally original and to credit David for creating something absolutely massive out of almost nothing. But at the same time, this wasn't even as weird or as shocking as I was expecting. I kind of wanted more, because the fact that I was able to formulate even a concept of an idea of what it was about was unexpected for me. I thought, you hear his name synonymous with, like, crazy and surrealism and, but there was, and you even said it, there was something grounded about this movie that just, like, I don't know. I was expecting more. I don't know. So anyway, all to say, I gave it a 2.5.
Wow.
Yeah. I wanted more.
See, this is why this should have been episode 1, first date.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we could have ended it there.
I mean, it's not to say I don't appreciate. I absolutely appreciate the you know... impact and the art of it all.
Yeah, I do think it was, that you wanted more surrealism.
Well, is this his most surreal film?
I haven't seen all of them, but I do think this one maybe is up there with them the most.
So this is one of the most Lynchian films, perhaps?
When people say Lynchian, I think Eraserhead.
Really?
Or okay. Twin Peaks, I guess. But Twin Peaks is also has a plot.
Yeah. I think I did myself a disservice going into it with any expectations at all.
Yeah.
But again, I don't not appreciate the art and the cultural impact, and just for someone That's who fair. Was going into it with the expectation of a Lynchian film.
You thought Lynchian meant, like, no coherence at all?
I guess. Yeah. Oh. I was really excited to, like, have to try to come up with some sort of concept behind it, you know? But it felt really straightforward, like, oh, this is a commentary on parenthood, you know? I don't know.
Well, I'm sorry Eraserhead wasn't weird enough for you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah.
What did you give it?
I give it a 4 out of 5.
Okay.
I really like this movie. I can't explain it. I think this movie becomes weirder. You watch it and you're like, yeah, that's Eraserhead. And then you try to explain it to someone later, and that's when it becomes almost weirder.
Yes.
You're like, how do I tell you the plot of this movie? So yeah, but I just appreciate the overall art for it. I love a movie that's kind of metaphor based. I like weird movies. I think it's fun. I think it's really funny. It doesn't get enough credit for how funny it is.
Yeah.
Her trying to pull the suitcase out from under the bed and just shaking the frame is one of the funniest scenes in a horror movie, period. I think that is genius. And yeah, I think it's weird and it's it's interesting, and it does. It feels like you're watching, you're at an art exhibit and just watching one of those weird little movies that's played on a TV from 1987.
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I did not like it. I just...
Okay, you definitely didn't like it. A 2.5 is... That's not a good rating.
I again...
Three
if I...
is when you start liking a movie.
Yeah.
2.5, yeah, you thought this movie was as good as Watchers. That's crazy.
Well, no, it's better than that, for sure. Mm.
Yeah, I know that. Do you know that?
I don't know. Yeah, I feel really bad rating it as poorly as I did, but...
Yeah, you should.
And the crazy thing is I'd watch it again. I would recommend it to people. I think people should watch it. Because
you just hated it.
It's like, it did successfully what I think Beau is Afraid was trying to do.
Okay.
You know, be original, be artsy, kind of
push
boundaries.
See, I think Beau is Afraid still did that. I still struggle with Beau is Afraid. I kind of want to rewatch it. Because it really did have, I think that if it was 30 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a real fan of the whole attic scene. You know the one.
Yeah, I do.
But yeah.
See, this movie too. Had it been 30 minutes shorter, just condense. Fuck.
You just wanted it to be a short.
Well, just condense all of the like drawn out scenes that just were kind of like dragging, you know?
See, I feel like that's almost where like the artistic sense of it comes in though.
I think he still could have gotten the artistic success speeding it up a little.
Okay.
You know?
No, but I respect it.
Thanks.
Would you survive?
I don't know that anybody's actually alive in this movie. I don't.
Oh, okay.
I do struggle to see myself in it.
Yeah.
At the very least, he accomplished that surrealist part.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm a thriving parent right now. I'm surviving and thriving.
There you go.
If that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess so. And I don't think anybody dies. He doesn't really die, does he? He has that like weird dream sort of.
Yeah, I don't think you could. You could probably make an argument either way for it.
Yeah. Well, I'm alive, I guess.
Yeah, I think
you?
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument that everybody survives this.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. Well, easy peasy.
Except maybe the baby.
Well, I mean, it grew after it was stabbed. So.
It had a hole in its lungs.
Well.
Or organs.
Yeah, I don't know if it needs those. What is it, you know?
True. Okay, well, good. We live.
We live. All right, so next week we're going to try something a little bit different. We're going to do a themed episode. So we're going to watch three different movies and talk about them all kind of in shorter segments. It's just a different format. We're going to see how it works. If you guys like it, we'll do more of that. If you guys hate it, we won't. Yeah. But yeah, so the theme is the best of the bad. So movies that maybe didn't have the best critical or audience scores, but have a kind of cult following.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to do rapid fire.
Okay.
Just first thing that comes to your mind, one sentence plot of what you think these movies are going to be about.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
First, Cursed.
Cursed is about a team of explorers who go in the jungle and they get cursed by the local tribes. And then
Ooh,
they bring it
okay.
home and then it spreads.
Ooh, fun. Okay. Idle Hands
is about a team of explorers in the jungle and they find an idol. No, I gotta think of something different. IDLE Hands?
IDLE.
Okay, so that makes more sense. It's a couple and they're growing old together. They move from the big city to a, you know, a remote farm.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have much to do there, so they get idle hands and then they start killing each other.
Crazy.
Trying to kill each other.
Okay. And then finally, Dead Silence.
Dead Silence is a cave movie. You go into a cave and it's dead silent. well, no, it's not dead silent, but it becomes dead silent. And once, like, you stop hearing, like, all the dripping noises and, like, the, like, airflow and stuff, that's when you start to die. It's dead silent. Not just silent.
Dead silent. As above, so below. All right. Wrong on three accounts. Yeah. Do you want a little piece of each one?
Yeah. No. Well, just give me, like, the like, is it supernatural? Is it
like cave? A premise?
Yeah.
All three are kind of supernatural. Okay. One's a creature feature.
Fun.
Yeah. One's a horror comedy.
Hooray!
One's a horror comedy. I'm not sure if they meant to.
Oh, gosh. One is on purpose and one of them is not on purpose?
I think it was kind of still on purpose, but...
Okay. Anybody I know in any of them?
Yes.
Anybody I like in any of them?
Yeah. Cursed was directed by Wes Craven, written by Kevin Williamson, who did Scream. It stars Christina Ricci and Jesse Eisenberg. Okay. And Judy Greer is in it.
Oh, yay!
Idle Hands is... we actually talked about it once, but Devon Sawa, Seth Green, Vivica A. Fox, all in that.
Okay.
Seth Green. And then, yeah, Dead Silence is directed by James Wan, written by Lee Whannell. Mm-hmm. Oh, and, dear. Donnie Wahlberg's in that one, so...
I've never seen a Donnie Wahlberg movie.
Wow! Your first Donnie film?
I think so.
That's crazy. No, he was in The Sixth Sense, Katie.
Oh, damn, I have seen The Sixth Sense. God, I don't remember that movie. I thought it was Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis is the main actor.
Oh, okay, but Donnie's still Sixth Sense. In it. Okay.
Yeah, he's in it as well. But yeah. So I'm excited to talk about those. We'll kind of do like a little rapid fire, maybe 15, 20 minutes each, just kind of going over each of them, if you agree with the critics or if you agree with the cult following.
Okay. Sounds fun.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Me too. And fun to come off of probably the biggest cult following movie ever.
Yeah, this has a huge cult following. We're going to keep up the cult.
Yay, cult.
Okay. All right, nice. Well, I'm sad you didn't like Eraserhead, but... I think this movie's kind of like I Saw the TV Glow for me, where I really love it, but I also kind of understand if people don't like it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not for everybody.
Sure.
But yeah, everybody should watch it. Give it a go.
I agree.
You might hate it. You might love it. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, if you got this far and you're still listening, that's kind of crazy. You should have stopped and then watched it and then listened, but whatever. I'm not here to dictate your life. But actually,
except
I am.
Like and subscribe. Wait a minute. We got to
wait. Same idea.
We
are dictating your life. Please like and subscribe. Please follow us on TikTok, which is back already. It was back before our last episode of us talking about it being gone was even posted. So yeah, we're on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. Please follow us.
Not so much.
Yeah, we don't really post on the other ones, but we're trying. We're trying.
And Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. Anywhere. Well, they're listening to it, so they know where to get the podcast.
Oh, right. Got it. Well, maybe they're watching it on YouTube. You never know.
That's true.
Hi, from wherever platforms. You're tuning in from.
Yeah, we appreciate you guys' support. We would love for that support to continue so that we can keep making episodes. That actually doesn't depend. Yeah, we don't make money off of this, so we're going to keep doing it.
Just, like, gives me something on my calendar, so I don't have nothing to look forward to, you know?
Yeah. And it helps me because I get to force you to watch any movie I want, which is great.
Yeah, and I actually do it, unlike TV shows.
I know.
That's the other podcast.
Where we just talk about every episode of Buffy. Shows.
Yeah.
Did you see that Charisma Carpenter, who plays Cordelia, she's on TikTok and she wants to do a podcast? Because she's never seen the whole show. She's never watched it all.
That's crazy. She should do it with us.
I know.
We should ask.
I think she'd probably do it with other people who are on the show, if I'm being honest. But Charisma Carpenter, I know you're a listener. Reach out. I would happily go over every detail of every episode of Buffy.
Yeah.
With you.
And I would let you do that without me.
I would insist that you come on as well.
Oh, thanks.
We're kind of a package deal at this point, I think.
Okay.
Anyways, enough about another podcast. Thank you for listening to this one, and yeah. We'll see you next week.
God, longest outro ever. See you Tuesday. See you next Tuesday.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.